So that, in fact, that is the significance of the, for the United Nations, rather unusual formulation of the using a specified time T. All of this was to happen at the same time.
Yeah, all of this to happen same time, beginning at a specified time T.
Now, again, in retrospect, there's one thing that doesn't seem to be covered in this aid memoir that had been a sticking point in the U.S. mediation, and that is the formulation, or any formulation, about the desires, the wishes, the interests of the inhabitants of the island, the Falkland Island. But was that already known in the task force to be a very difficult issue in terms of negotiations?
That was definitely known, because it was on that issue that the issue of sovereignty that Secretary of State Haig's efforts had eventually foundered, that he could not overcome that issue. So we did know about it, but we did feel that in the aid memoir we need not refer to that issue, but rather refer to negotiations to seek a diplomatic solution to their differences. And we did not define what those differences were or elaborate upon that point. But obviously we knew that that was an issue, but we felt that it would not be in the best interest of securing the concurrence of the two parties to the approach outlined in the aid memoir if we spelt out in greater detail that issue.
And the next step, in fact, was the response of the British and the Argentinians to this aid memoir. Eventually, what was their response?
The British ambassador, Ambassador Parsons, you know, who was a very eminent ambassador, he met the Secretary General on the 6th of May and handed over a message of the same date from Foreign Secretary Pym, informing the Secretary General that the British government accepted the framework provided by the aid memoir. And earlier, the previous day, in fact, Secretary General had received a similar letter from the Foreign Minister Costa Mendes, accepting the Secretary General's approach. So that opened the way for more formal mediatory efforts. And the Argentine government designated Mr. Enrique Ross, who was Undersecretary for Foreign Affairs, to be the main interlocutor on their part.
Yes, could I just depart from the substance for a moment and ask you to give your impressions of the main protagonists on the various sides, that is the Argentinian side, the British side, and if you will, also the American side. At this point?
Well, as far as our contacts here were concerned, they were mainly with Ambassador Parsons, apart from this one meeting which had taken place with Foreign Secretary Pym over dinner. But otherwise, Ambassador Parsons was the main interlocutor of the Secretary General, and he is an extremely able, very amiable, very personable individual, greatly experienced in diplomacy, very skilled and known to be at that time held in high esteem by his government, and therefore able to operate with a certain amount of confidence. On the other side, Enrique Ross was known to us. He had been permanent representative of Argentina before, and in that capacity had been very knowledgeable about the United Nations, had close relations with many secretariat officials, and had left a very good name for himself in the United Nations, and all of us were very pleased that he had been chosen as an interlocutor, because we could again in him find what you might call an interlocutor valable, a person who again could be considered as having the capacity to engage in a dialogue with trust, understanding, and the fact that he was at a sufficiently high level in his government, the possibility that he would speak with greater authority than perhaps the permanent representative could. But on the American side, frankly, we did not have an interlocutor, because we were not engaged in a mediatory effort with the Americans. But from time to time, the Secretary General did meet with Ambassador Kirkpatrick, who was permanent representative, and also he kept the Secretary of State Haig informed on the telephone.
Were there other Argentinians in New York seemingly also engaged, perhaps with Ambassador Kirkpatrick, in some kind of efforts with regard to the Falklands mediation?
There was no formal or other contact with us. At least I don't remember there ever coming to see me. And I don't believe anyone met the Secretary General.
No, the question really was whether there was separate Argentinians here dealing with Mrs. Kirkpatrick.
Not to our knowledge at that time.
Now, one other question about Enrique.
Except what came out in the press.
Right.
There was a press report about Ambassador Kirkpatrick having, but I don't remember whether it was at that time or was later. Frankly speaking, you know, it's so long ago, it's difficult to place when this report came out in the press.
But whatever it was quite separate from...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One other question about Enrique Ross. He had been permanent representative of Argentina before. In fact, am I correct that that was before the junta took over in Argentina, so that you would not have considered him as directly related to the junta?
I believe that's correct.
Because I ask that question because I want to ask in addition whether in the course of these the intricate mediation, the Secretary General or you gained a particular idea as to the decision-making process in Buenos Aires.
Yes, we were not sure exactly how the decision-making process was in Argentina, but we felt, as I said, that by sending a Ambassador Ross, they were indicating their seriousness in the process, and we also felt that he would therefore be in a better position to obtain decisions or guidance as required, not knowing the intricacies of decision making in Buenos Aires itself.
Now, were there a number of military officers who were associated with him in his when he would be speaking with Secretary General, or
no?
They were not.
There were nobody in uniform, at least. I mean, if somebody was present in the room in civilian clothes who happened to be a military person, I really never occurred to me.
So as far as you were aware, then the junta had no, what you might call, direct representative here in dealing with.
As far as knew, there was nobody separate from Ambassador Ross who had his own or her own agenda.
Who seemed to have full authority.
Who seemed to have full authority, to the extent that he was able to get instructions and then report back, and what he reported back to the Secretary General seemed to be the position of whoever had the decision-making powers in Buenos Aires.
Now, I'd like to ask in this connection if you can describe the actual negotiating procedure that that the Secretary General undertook. Was it a piece by piece, step by step negotiating process in terms of wording?
First of all, the procedure was of what you may call formal proximity talks that he held separate meetings with the two delegations, and then sometimes alternating with them. So, for example, on Saturday, the 8th of May, he had four separate meetings, 9:30 and 4 o'clock with the Argentine delegation, and at 11:30 and 5:30 p.m. with the British delegation. And the approach which the Secretary General presented to them first was to seek confirmation of their general acceptance of what had been stated in the aid memoir.
As a framework?
As a framework. Argentina accepted the principle of simultaneity. The United Kingdom was not opposed to that concept, but pointed out possible practical difficulties in implementation. Both sides agreed on mutual and phased withdrawals of forces. There were differences on the timetable. And then also there were discussions on the exclusion zone, transitional arrangements, and so on. But yes, the approach of the Secretary General, to go back to your question, was a step-by-step approach that, as the negotiations proceeded, the Secretary General hoped that the points of agreement would emerge which would be put aside for eventual inclusion in a final paper, that it would be better to move on to the next subject without necessarily trying that everything should be settled. But soon the British made it clear that unless the issue of sovereignty was tackled in a satisfactory manner, as far as they were concerned, all other issues, even if they were resolved in consultations, would not be able to overcome the problems of reaching a settlement. And therefore, at one point in time, the Secretary General decided to focus on that issue as the key issue, that if that was resolved, then the other issues could fall in place on which agreement was not forthcoming.
And how did he go about this sovereignty question, which was the most difficult?
Well, he listened to both sides on this issue, and then he came up with the language which could, in his view, provide a way out. And he presented that language to both sides, to to see their reaction. And eventually he got the agreement of both sides.
Now, was a part of this an agreement or an understanding that the entire agreement that was being proposed by the Secretary General was within the concept of provisional measures, that is, that whatever was done would not, in fact, determine the final outcome of ultimate negotiations?
Absolutely. That was in terms of the negotiations to be undertaken later on, that this was all that would, those negotiations were without prejudice to the rights, claims, or position of the parties, and without prejudgment of the outcome.
So that the question of sovereignty was in reality not determined in the formulae that the Secretary General used, or insofar as they got as far as the British and the Argentinians agreed.
Yes, the question of sovereignty was not decided.
Was the there was, though, extensive agreement on the nature of an interim administration that would be established in the islands. Is that correct?
The nature of the interim administration?
That is, a UN.
UN, yes. That was a basic principle of it, was accepted by both sides. What we had by then developed the idea to include that apart from the UN flag, there would also be the two flags of Argentina and UK which would fly. We had also proposed that apart from the, in the advisory council to the UN interim administrator, apart from the members of the Legislative Council, there would also be one member nominated by the Argentinians, so that there would be presence there. And there was a time limit. The other thing which was agreed was that the interim arrangement and the negotiations would last only till 31 December 1982. And so there was a kind of a deadline set for reaching agreement, And both sides accepted that deadline, but then they raised the issue of what were to happen if no agreement was reached by that date. And that was one of the issues which we were in the process of discussing when the British had come out with their own paper,
which was publicly released, I believe.
Which was publicly released, because immediately after the acceptance by Argentina of the no prejudgment clause, because that was the key issue, the comment of Ambassador Parsons was that this was a most remarkable breakthrough, because on this issue the General Haig had failed to get agreement, and there was a feeling generally that now, with this important question being resolved, there may be more give and take towards a final agreement.
If I could just ask you a specific question there. With the agreement on this formulation, it was felt that the central issue of sovereignty had been put aside, so to speak.
That's right. That was put aside, and in fact Ambassador Parsons said that in view of the extremely encouraging development on the no prejudgment issue, he thought it would now be possible for his government to work on the other problems. And he suggested that the Secretary General might wish to wait for the reaction of the British government before presenting a consolidated draft. So we were at that point looking towards preparing a consolidated draft agreement, which would perhaps have some of the issues in square brackets or options, but at least it would, all of us were highly pleased, and if one can even say euphoric, by the fact that we had made this breakthrough, which was recognized as such by the British. And then, the following day, this happened on the 11th of May, and on the 12th of May, when the meeting with Ambassador Parsons took place to kind of look at some of these other open issues, he informed that he had been asked to go back
to London.
To London. He. And then, he had come back with on a number of issues with the position of his government, which indicated a hardening of their position rather than a more flexible attitude after getting this major, one can say, concession from the Argentinian side, that they were ready to have an agreement without a specific reference to their sovereignty. And with this, this was not very encouraging from the Secretary General's point of view, that this position had, this hardening of position had taken place, which could perhaps provoke an equally hard reaction from the Argentinians.
At this point, though, it was still confidential, is that right?
It was still confidential.
And I wanted to just ask in that connection, how great emphasis did the Secretary General place on the need for confidentiality as these negotiations continued?
Well, Well, the Secretary General, I mean, from the very beginning, felt that his role could best be discharged through what is known as quiet diplomacy. And one of the essential ingredients of quiet diplomacy is confidentiality, that one works with the different parties, shares thoughts with them, come up with possible alternatives, and all that has to be kept confidential, because this is the process of looking for the right formula. And if there's such a formula or alternatives were to become public, it would open up a debate which could be detrimental to the search of that kind of a formula. So Secretary General's approach, not only in fact in that case, but throughout his term as Secretary General, has been to maintain confidentiality in negotiations, but be very open when it comes to the final position, and not to mince words when the time has come to make things public.
And how successful was he in maintaining the confidentiality and in the course of these negotiations?
I think he was quite confidential, quite successful in maintaining the confidentiality. I think it was one of the surprises, perhaps, that while there were quite a number of people involved in the UN, also and through the task force, the confidentiality of these talks was essentially maintained. And even till today, I think very little is known publicly about what the UN did or did not do. I think our conversation perhaps is the one which is revealing for the first time some of the things that were going on inside the house or during these talks.
Now, when the British, in fact, did come back with the statement of their proposal, actually, it was publicized, so this moved things from the confidential plane to the public plane. What was the reaction in the United Nations, and what was the Secretary General's reaction at this point?
We were taken by surprise. We had, as I mentioned earlier, been working on the assumption that once the various pieces of a settlement were identified, they would be put together in the form of a comprehensive draft. And then we were therefore surprised by the fact that the British went ahead and presented a comprehensive text, which included some of the things which had been worked out during the course of the Secretary General's mediation, but on other issues which were still being discussed and where we had the impression that the British were not closing the door, that they then, at after this famous meeting that was held at the country house of the British Prime Minister Thatcher, they put out this text and presented a fait accompli not only to Argentina but also to the United Nations Secretary General, who more or less was left then just with the option of trying to convince the Argentinians to give a reaction which would not close the door to perhaps reopening some of the issues in a way that a mutually satisfactory resolution should come out. But it was definitely at that time felt by me to be a major setback at a time when our hopes had been so high.
And from the psychological point of view, the Secretary General had a certain rapport with the Argentinian side. I believe he had talked to General Galtieri several times by then. Was it his sense that psychologically the presentation of a kind of a fait accompli by the British side would make it difficult for the Argentinians to respond?
That was the sense of all of us, the Secretary General and myself, and if I remember correctly, you, I think all of us who were involved, Alvaro de Soto, we all had this feeling that in this way it was surely a negative reaction that would come from Buenos Aires, and it was a great pity because it had seemed to us that the positions had narrowed to an extent that it was a matter of a little bit more give and take before a final document acceptable to both sides could have been worked out.
And if I could now bring in the time factor again, the British landing force was by then getting fairly close to the Falklands, isn't that right? So the my question really is, did you have a sense of great time pressure at this point?